Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another exciting edition of Monday Motivation. Hi everyone, this is Rabbi Garfinkel of Project 613 in Chicago with a live studio audience. Wow. That live studio audience never grows old. As we begin a very exciting Monday Motivation and a Mazel Tov to Philadelphia Eagles fans all around on your victory. Condolences to Kansas City Chiefs fans, including some people very near and dear to me. But, you know, overall, to go to three straight Super Bowls, win two out of three of them, is super impressive. And something tells me that the Chiefs aren't going anywhere. But nevertheless, a shout out to those Eagles. Lots of very exciting potential lessons from the Super Bowl. But I'm not sure I'm going to go there that much. I'll just say it's a very instructive thing about what excites us. What excites us in life? What are we passionate about? What fires us up? And it's always good to keep everything in perspective. What really fires us up? And so, however, I would just say like this. However much the Super Bowl fires you up, one way or the other, you should be at least as fired up, if not more, regarding Judaism, being Jewish, being part of the Jewish people, and the incredible legacy that we have 3,800 years since Abraham, since Abraham and Sarah walked planet Earth, and have the greatest startup of human history with angel funding, literally, doom boom. Actually, we're going to talk about that angel funding tonight. We'll get to that. That's actually pretty cool. Didn't think about that in preparing the podcast. But yes, the angel funding has lasted for 3,800 years and still going. So a very good idea to start our Monday. What do we get excited about? What do we get pumped up about? And God willing, the more we plug in to how awesome it is to be Jewish, that will be that which pumps us up. We had an incredible Shabbos here in the Hood, West Rogers Park, with a great, great crowd and just incredible people. Just reminds us just how special it is when people come to West Rogers Park, even though we spend a lot of time downtown now. All right, that is the roundup and also the exciting second mensch of the month, Jen Aaron Mazel Tov, a longtime participant in Project 613, even before the organization was officially founded. Jen was involved in our young professional work and has been very faithful and loyal and has grown a ton in her Jewish identity and has inspired others. So check it out. At the end of this broadcast, we have the audio and the video is all over social media, and I plan on putting the link to the video on YouTube in the description of the podcast. All right, so without any further ado, we have manna from heaven. Yes, so we see an unbelievable theme continuing on from last week's Torah portion. Yes, right, last week's Torah portion, meaning last week's podcast as well. We talk about emuna. We talk about emuna, being faithful to that which we know is true. A fundamental difference between Jewish faith and other faith is that other faith, you think of blind faith. Well, there's blind faith and there's really nothing. Why should I believe in that more than anything else? In other words, some person tells me, believe in this, cut your head off, believe in X, Y, or Z. What basis is there? And yet, on the other hand, if there is a basis, in fact, for faith, then why do we call it faith? We should call it knowledge. So which is it? I don't believe 2 plus 2 is 4. I know 2 plus 2 is 4. And so therefore, if I know, if I have knowledge, of something, then where's the point of faith? And what we explained last week is that there were certain anchoring events of truth, of reality that happened to the Jewish people back in Egypt land. And this is, and when we left Egypt, and these are the factual imprints. God took the Jewish people out of Egypt through 10 miraculous plagues. And then this week in Parshas Beshalach, God, or this past week, he splits the sea in miraculous fashion. And these are events experienced by 3 million people. And then 50 days after we left Egypt, we stood at Mount Sinai and 3 million people heard God speak to them directly. It was baked into our consciousness, seared into our very being, that God watches out for us, that God chose us for an incredible relationship. And we talk about something to be pumped up about. That is something to be pumped up about. I know that the American Jew bristles at the whole chosen people thing. Guys, relax. You see what's happening. If we don't embrace it positively, they'll remind us negatively. As one great rabbi, Rav Meir Shapiro, of the famous founding of the Daf Yomi, said, if the Jews don't make Kiddush, the Goyim will make Havdalah. If we do not sanctify ourselves positively and embrace our identity, then sadly, the non-Jews will remind us of who we are. And maybe if I would have said that even a couple of years ago, people would have said, ah, Rabbi, you're being a little too pessimistic. But no, we've seen viscerally that that is exactly true. So guys, they know we're different. It's up to us now to embrace it. And so that's an exciting, amazing thing already at 7 minutes in to Monday Motivation podcast this week. And so these fundamental experiences of fact, of truth, of reality, that it's not theoretical. We met the Almighty. How do we know that Hashem exists? We met him. He spoke to us. We have exactly the record of what he said. We have detailed conversations of what he told to Moshe to tell us. We have detailed information about how he feels about us. It's written in the Torah. Whatever that means, obviously God is perfect and does not have human emotions in the way that we do. But we have a very intimate knowledge of God. It's not just that it was a one-hit wonder. He was with us for 40 years, and guess what? He's still with us every day. But we have a written record of it. And so where does faith come in? Faith comes in on October 7th. Faith comes in during the Holocaust. Faith comes in when there's no money in the bank account. Faith comes in when there's negative in the bank account and you're in debt. And then, when we don't feel God's presence and we feel distant from the Almighty, I am faithful to that which I know is true. The lights were on in Egypt. The lightning flash of clarity was there. But then the lightning flash goes away and we're left many times in a dark forest. My faith is not one of blind faith. My faith is one that I know that God is there with me, even when I don't see it. When the flash of lightning then comes again and my trail is enlightened and blazoned ahead of me, that is a moment where God shares the direction of the path. But even before then, that is what we talk about, a Jew's faith, emunah. It's not a faith, it's a faithfulness. I'm faithful to the path. I'm faithful to the Hashem is with us even when it's dark outside, because I know there will be a brighter dawn tomorrow. That is the beautiful shiluv in Hebrew, the beautiful confluence of how faith comes together with fact to create what we call Emunah. And these Torah portions have been searing God's presence into our consciousness with event after event. We talked about the plagues and all 10 of them, right? We're different parts of showing domination over all types of stratosphere of creation, from the sea to the land to the people to the animals to the animals to the people to the sky to everything. God controls everything, even culture God controls. And then God takes us out of a land that no slave had ever escaped from Egypt. You think this the Iron Curtain was rough, okay? They got nothing on Pharaoh. And then we come out in this past week's Torah portion, and we are seemingly confused in our path in the desert. God causes us, tells us to go out and then come back. It's like bait. It's baiting Pharaoh. And Pharaoh comes and chases after us. And there we are at the sea. And on one side we have the sea, which with 3 million people, many of which are children, are the only option is to go in. You imagine that, with all the people drowning, God forbid. The other option was to face the Egyptians, and there was no side exit. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? There's two versions in the Talmud of what actually happens. One says that there was a fight between two tribes. Who wanted to be first? Okay, Binyamin, Benjamin, or Yehuda. That's the less known version of the story. There's another version that more people know, that Nachshon ben Amminadab, the head of the tribe of Yehuda, of Judah, jumped in, and in his efforts of self-sacrifice and of emunah, that the water went up to his nostrils and it didn't matter. And only then, when he was about to drown, did the water split. His act of courage and faith caused the sea to split. And so the Jewish people were saved and the Egyptians were drowned. And now we head off to the desert. Now, what happens when you bring 3 million people into the desert and there's no food or water? What in the world do you do? So there was leftovers. Now, leftovers, I don't know about in your house how long leftovers last, but for us at our house, we got one shot, okay? So Friday night is, you know, big Shabbos meal, and the leftovers by Sunday night are still, I have to say, really legit. Sometimes even better, the chicken soup on a Sunday night. Unbelievable. And, okay, but after Sunday night, that's it. That's it. Whatever's not, it's gone. But the Jewish people, Rashi tells us, ate the leftovers of the matzah they miraculously extended for 61 meals, a whole nother month, until the middle of the next month of Iyar, after the Jewish people left. And then the Jewish people started complaining, we have no food. And the Hashem was not happy with us. And one of my friends asked me, he's like, well, what do you expect? What do you expect? There's no food, right? You know, like, imagine a Jewish mom without food for her children, right? You know, don't mess with a Jewish mom. No food, you know? Not only do you need 3 meals a day, you need the snacks in between the snacks between the meals, right? You know, 2-3 snacks before the meals. And yet the Jewish people, in our faithfulness, we went out into the desert trusting that the Almighty will take care of us. And when the food ran out, the leftovers of the leftovers of the leftovers miraculously extended, but they did run out at that point. The Jewish people did complain. And then Hashem tells Moshe that something unbelievable is going to happen, and something unbelievable happens. And it's called the mon in Hebrew. And in English, it's called manna. And this is where we get the expression manna from heaven. And manna was this divine food that fell each morning in the desert. And there was an omer, there was a certain amount of food per person. And if people tried to gather more, it didn't fill them up anymore or take less. It always would be sufficient, exactly what a person needed. Could we imagine if we ate exactly what we needed without taking two more, or on the other hand, also two less? Can you imagine that? And it was a magical food. There was no waste from it. It was perfectly digested into the body. There were some unique features of it. You could not store it from one day to the next. Once you got your manna for the day, that's your portion for the day. If you tried to save it to the next day, it would spoil, be rotten. And some of the Jews tried to get to store up the manna. They didn't listen. Moshe got a little upset. It's like, you know, your 401k, you know, in manna. Now, let's just be real over here. Can you imagine all of us having no money in the bank account and waiting for a deposit the next day? How would you feel about that? I know how I would feel about that. Not so great. It's nice having money in the bank. It really is. Okay? Why would God feed us this way? You know, another time he fed us with quail. There was like an excess of quail. We could keep the quail with us and but no, for 40 years in the desert, God fed us through manna, through mun. Why? To inculcate in us this message is that I'm taking care of you now. And just like I'm taking care of you now financially, I'm going to take care of you later financially. Right now, you don't need to plow or sow the seeds or harvest or reap or crush the grain to make flour. I'm doing it all for you. And I want to sear into your consciousness that just as I'm taking care of you now, so too when you go into the land of Israel and you do plow and plant and harvest and reap and grind and make flour and bread, I'm the one, says Hashem, that's sending the blessing. I'm the one sending the blessing. In the desert, you did it without any effort. Now here, and you knew that it was a miracle. Now here's the trick. When you go into the land of Israel and you do put in effort, that you still maintain this recognition that it is still God's blessing that it makes, that brings you money, that brings you success. And the rabbis in their infinite wisdom inculcated this message into Jewish ritual. So on Shabbos, so what happened? One more thing. In the desert, there was on Friday, we said, right, you can't save the manna from one to the next, except on Friday. On Friday, we would get a double portion of manna. We got a double portion of manna. So why? So that we would not break the laws of Shabbos and collect things outside of our homes. No Eruv, okay, complicated for another time. But we couldn't collect things on Shabbos. And so therefore, we got a double portion of manna on Fridays. And the people, Jewish people said, what is this for? And Moshe explained, this is this Shabbos that we've been doing. And you need to collect your double portion on Friday so you won't need to collect on Shabbos. When was the last time you were at a Shabbos meal? How many challahs do we use each of the three meals of Shabbos? We use two loaves. Why? Because it recalls and reminds us of the manna that fell from heaven in the desert. With no effort, we inculcate that same ritual in our Shabbos every week to testify to the Almighty that now that on Shabbos I'm not working, I have the same faithfulness that you're going to take care of us now, just like you took care of us back in the desert. How powerful, how amazing when you understand Jewish ritual and Jewish law. It's not random. Some rabbi just came up with this two challah bit. No, it's permanent. It's enshrined in our ritual from our history. It's absolutely unbelievable. And so therefore, Shabbos, which is the day of faith, the day of faithfulness, where we stop working, we say, God, I know you're going to take care of me. And it's going to be unbelievable. You're going to take care of me. Just like the manna from heaven then, so too manna from heaven now. There's a lot more to say about the manna, but I want to finish with a story. And I cannot tell you how many miraculous stories that my wife and I have encountered in this area of manna for the last, oh my goodness, almost 30 years. Married in 1998, so we're going to be celebrating. We're 26 and a half years of marriage, and the first several years of our life were on a very meager stipend from Yeshiva Suri, was working teaching. Thank God my parents, who are listening now, have inestimable angel funding in whatever work we are doing because of the support that they gave us at that time. But nevertheless, as we started having children and in Israel, it was absolutely a point where, you know, everyone in life has to be experience abject poverty. It's great. It creates humility. But I do have to say one story from when we, thank God, made it. We made it through Israel, thank God, on a very meager stipend. And we headed out to UCLA to do Jewish outreach. And there was a bill from UCLA Medical Center that was astronomical. One family member had something happen, whatever, okay, whatever it was. But it was just like $10,000, $15,000, something even after insurance. It was some ridiculous amount of money, and we had no idea. Now, what happened was we went in on Shabbos because it was somewhat of an emergency situation. Everything was fine, Baruch Hashem, in the end, but it was on Shabbos. So they wanted me to sign. They wanted me to sign. The doctor says, I'm so sorry. I'll come back Sunday and sign, but I can't sign now because it's my Shabbos. I said, oh, it's okay. So that began many months of back and forth with UCLA Medical Center billing and back and forth and back and forth. I said, look, I'm so sorry. They said, I know your insurance doesn't cover, whatever the story was. You owe us $15,000. And I'm like, look, you're like, the likelihood of us coming up with that money is like not happening. So eventually I kept working with them. And it finally got a very wonderful guy on the line. And I think he was a religious guy. Catholic, Christian, something, whatever. And we spoke each other's language. And he said, sir, I want to help you. I see that you know, we should really take care of clergy, and you're a clergy member, and we want to make this happen. And I said, thank you so much, sir. And then he looks down and he said, hey, wait a minute. You didn't sign any of the papers. I said, yeah, no, it was our Shabbos, so I couldn't sign anything. He said, well, technically, that's a loophole that you actually never obligated yourself to the payment. And therefore, I think that's going to be enough of a loophole for me to waive all of the charges. And I didn't even know what to do with myself. I didn't want to, you know, expect that it was going to happen. He calls me back the next day. He said, congratulations, because you didn't sign, we were able to use that as a loophole to forgive the entire amount. Imagine those people who keep Shabbos, they say, oh my goodness, what are we going to do? We need another day to work. I need to make the money. No, when we keep Shabbos, when we live the lesson of the manna of the mon, that's when Hashem showers down his blessings to us. God bless. Have an amazing week. And God willing, we will live the lessons of the month and have an incredible week. God willing, we will see you right back here next week for another exciting edition of Monday Motivation. And stay tuned for the exciting edition of Project 613's Mensch of the Month with Jen Aaron after the outro music. Hi everyone, Rabbi Garfinkel here of Project 613, and we are so excited to do the big reveal of the second Mensch of the Month. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for Jen Aaron! Wow, the live studio audience of me is going crazy. It's going crazy. Amazing. Jen, thank you so much. Congratulations, Mazel Tov, for being Mensch of the Month. You're an incredible mensch. You know, both Male and females could be mensches, and we think at Project 613 about an amazing mensch. You are right at the top of the list. So thank you for being involved and for being such a positive attitude at all our events and all of the programming you've done, which we're going to talk about. And mazel tov.
Thanks, Rabbi.
Okay, so let's dig in right away to the interview. Tell us about yourself, your family growing up, and maybe a little bit about your Jewish background.
Yeah, I grew up in Wheaton, Illinois. I know there are some Jews in Wheaton. It's a long story, but basically my grandpa worked for Argonne National Laboratory and moved the family to Glen Ellen, and my dad wanted to be near his parents, so I grew up right next to there in Wheaton, Illinois.
Okay, so now, Jen, even though I've lived in Chicago for 17 years, so if Chicago is the dot on the map, like Wheaton is north, south, where is Wheaton?
It's directly west of the Loop.
Oh, okay, fine.
So, yeah.
Near Naperthrill?
Right next to Naperthrill.
By the way, it's called Naperville, but it's such a boring... People say they grow up there.
They say Naperthrill.
And they say Naperthrill. It's like a joke if you know Naperthrill. Yeah. So is Wheaton like Naperthrill? Is it pretty boring and straight?
It's boring, but with more churches. there, except for the Vatican, there are more churches per square mile than anywhere in the world.
Are you serious?
I'm very serious. In Wheaton, Illinois, yeah.
And this nice Jewish family comes and... plops themselves down in the middle of Wheaton, Illinois.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Made some very interesting growing up. Jewishly, what was going on in Wheaton?
So in Wheaton itself, not so much, but there's a synagogue in Lombard where I started out at. It's a time, and that's great. Where it's Reform. I was there up until I was in fifth grade, and then when I was, then we moved on to Congregation Beth Shalom in Naperville.
Okay, there you go.
And at the time, it was Reconstructionist, and now it's unaffiliated, but that's where I had my bat mitzvah, that's where I had my, the formative years of my Jewish education, and it was a good experience. It was definitely clear that I was different than most of my classmates going to school.
What do you mean?
I mean, being Jewish in an area that is not necessarily as Jewish, it felt very like being very different, but it was always very clear that we were Jewish and that was our identity. And just holding on to that. So, yeah.
So it's something you felt.
Oh, yes. 100%. It's like you are Jewish. There's no other path. Like that's who you are.
So those were the marching orders from home. So there was a strong... And was there any overt anti-Semitism growing up or?
Never. I never really felt that. But it was.
Which is good. We like it when there's not that. Sadly, today there's a lot of that. But
and it's very possible this because being a young girl and a woman that I wasn't experiencing it. My brother, I think, would experience it a little bit more than I did. But I felt very comfortable sharing with everyone that I was Jewish. It was like, no, I don't celebrate Christmas. Like, no, this is who I am. And just that's that. So,
Do you think that ironically, and I've seen this go both ways, that being in a predominantly non-Jewish environment, that might have made you stronger as opposed to North Shore where there's pockets of really large amounts of Jews?
Yeah, I think it definitely helped. I was definitely holding on to that identity and definitely showing people, I would try to educate people. I would tell it, these are the holidays, this is what's happening. So, yeah, I think so.
Amazing. So let's get back now to your actual Jewish family story, because, I like Jewish genealogy and... We went to Spain together, and we've done a lot together, which, God willing, we'll get to. But tell us about your family tree a little bit, where they come from, some really exciting, interesting background.
Yeah, so my dad's side, my paternal grandmother, her family came from what is now Belarus. It was Russia at the time. Mm-hmm. And my paternal grandfather came, his parents came from the region which is around the Carpathian Mountains. On my mom's side, my grandmother was a Holocaust survivor from it was Czechoslovakia at the time.
Really?
And her whole family, except for a cousin and her uncle, were wiped out. Oh, and so it was definitely...
How did she get out? I'm sure that was probably an interview of
her. She was in the camps, and she survived with her cousin. And
like, how old was she?
She was like a teenager. And so she was in the work camps, and her cousin was like in an area right next to her, and then she would share her rations with her cousin, and it was really hard. But and she never spoke of it. She has since passed away, but wow. I am lucky enough, my middle name is for her. My middle name is Frida, after my grandmother, so I feel really honored to carry on her legacy in terms of.
And you have that fight in you, Jen. Yeah. You have that fight. That is actually really, really special.
Yeah. And then my grandfather, his parents came from Constantinople, what is now Istanbul. And so I'm mostly Ashkenazi, but I have a Sephardi grandpa. So grew up speaking Ladino.
He did.
He grew up speaking Ladino. His parents came before he was born, and he was born in the 20s, but they spoke Ladino in the household. Amazing. And it was just, yeah.
So obviously your grandmother, who survived the Holocaust, came to America afterwards. But the rest of your grandparents, so when was the journey to America?
So around the turn of the 19th century, my great-grandparents came to the U.S. And my grandmother was the only immigrant. All the rest of my grandparents were born here.
You know, I love when we talk about, you know, intermarriage, you know, like, so there is a kosher type of intermarriage, okay? This is when Sephardim and Ashkenazim marry, okay? It's almost two distinct branches, obviously all Jewish.
Yeah.
But I love this concept that sometimes in the Jewish world, I've seen this, the families themselves have not seen each other since the destruction of the Second Temple, okay, in 70 CE, and one family went right and one family went left. And for 1900 years, they don't meet each other. And then, punk, there we go, in New York.
Yeah.
There it is. A reunification of Jewry after almost 2,000 years. Mm-hmm. And what kept them that way is their adherence to being Jewish.
Yeah.
And those people who made the 1900-year families that made that loop was their adherence to being Jewish. So... Mm-hmm. It's an amazing story.
Definitely.
Yeah. I love it. Okay, so let's fast forward personally now with Jen. So we did high school, college. To what was?
I went to a tiny school in Iowa called Co.
Okay.
There were probably like less than 10 Jew students on campus.
And in the state also?
No. There are actually some big schools in Iowa that have bigger Jewish populations.
Right. Drake, I know. Yeah.
But basically, Co had like 5 Jewish professors and maybe 5 Jewish students. Wow. And that was it. So it was also, but again, I was holding on to my Jewish identity. I was making it clear, like, I'm Jewish. That's who I am. Like, wow. That, you can't change that. So.
So yeah. Special. Okay. So you graduate and you're in Chicago.
Yeah. Well, so not quite.
Or not yet.
I graduate and I'm living in the suburbs a little bit. And then I do some time in Israel. I did a Masab program where I was interning there. And I was actually under now a member of the Knesset, Simcha Don Rotman.
We did not know we had very powerful connections to the Israeli government here. So if you have any issues with what's going on, please. We'll get you to Jen. She will get you right to the Knesset, okay?
At the time, he was heading up a think tank trying to make Israel more democratic. It was Mishalut. So, yeah.
Wow. Now, what year are we talking now?
This was 2014.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing. Okay. So, you had a whole year there?
I was there for 5.5 months.
Beautiful.
Yeah. It was an amazing time.
That must have been very special.
Yeah,
I'm a little jealous of that, but okay. All right. So, then you're... Take us to your next steps.
Yeah, so then I come back. I have another internship in DuPage County, and then I go to grad school at DePaul University, and that's actually where I first got connected with hearing about the Shabbos dinners that you had. That was 9 years ago. Was the first time like there was an activity fair at DePaul. I learned about what you were doing, and I was like, oh, this is great. So
that is amazing. So actually, talk about preceding things. So you actually are older than Project 613.
Yeah. Yeah. Back from the jet days.
So amazing.
Yeah.
So Jet is really where it all started. We give a shout out, Jet YP, as we started that as the Young Professional thing. I was blessed to be with Rabbi Khan from 2007 to 2017. So we really, for the end years, we're really focusing just on Young Professionals, my division. And you were part of that.
Yeah. I was doing the original Project 613.
Which is, tell everyone what the original was.
So basically,
we're really getting the history now.
Yeah. So it was this really great program where it would be over the course of like six classes. You were like, there was an interview to like really be sure that you're going to actually come to all the classes. You had to do the Shabbos in the hood. One time I actually like listen into the class when I was on a train coming back from Springfield.
I remember that.
And I was like, I really want to go to this like really cool thing in Springfield, but I really want to like listen into this class. So I was on the train, the Amtrak, listening in to be sure that I wasn't going to miss the class. And I got like 90% of it. So I was happy that it worked out.
I actually, in my mind, am remembering the classroom, even where we were in the DePaul graduate school, DePaul Law School. Mm-hmm. And it was... That was amazing. I forgot about this. And I felt to myself after that, I'm like, wow, here is a dedicated person. She had made a commitment to come to these classes. And, you know, that's amazing. Okay, great. And then so 2017, Project 613 is launched.
Yeah.
And you were part of that launch.
Yeah, I was at the launch party. I went to the first couple classes, but I was in exile in Wheaton. I had a job in the suburbs. I was with my parents. So it was hard to get down to the
Do loop. We forgive her? Is she forgiven? I think she's okay.
Right? Okay.
You made it to mention the munch. So that's okay. You took time out. Yeah. But I think that's part of it. It's part of the... You know, what Project 613 is all about is we're here for the participants. The participants are here for us. And we're creating this community that, okay, people go away, but they know that there's going to be a warm landing spot when they're ready.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So then you come out of your exile from the Western suburbs.
Yes.
And you're back in the city.
Yeah. In 2021, I came back and... I saw that the classes were coming back as well in person, so I was like, I have to come back. So I was fortunate enough to come back.
Now, Jen, you have a really good habit, a habit that, you know, I don't have. Jen is always on time. Jen is not only always on time, Jen is early. On time for Jen. I would think you'd be a German Jew. You know, they're famous. But Jen, and the reason I say that is because Jen would always be the one to come early and help set up when we're sliding in like 2 minutes before showtime. Jen's like, already our rabbis, I'm ready to help. And there's nothing more endearing than having someone help you. And really, it's really one of your really amazing character traits. Your mensch traits is really being a giver.
Yeah, yeah. I try, yeah.
Amazing. So tell us about, okay, so let's do weekly classes, because mm-hmm. I think some people may know or not know what we do, but I think that's really the engine. Tell us about what happens to the classes. Why do you keep coming back? What's meaningful?
Yeah, so usually it starts out with dinner, excellent food, and then we like delve into these really great sources from the Torah, from Jewish scholars, and it's just always so meaningful. It's often with chavrusa learning, which I really...
Explain chavrusa learning to the audience.
Yeah, so basically you pair up with someone, and between the two of you, you should read out the source out loud, and then basically you can discuss it. Together, you're putting together two heads in order to try and understand the information that you've just read. And then we'll come back together as a group and then discuss it as well. So maybe you went on one path with your partner, and maybe as a group you could go on a different path. But at the end of the day, you're really learning a lot, and you're really like delving into some really great source material.
That's great. That's great. And that's really our approach, is we want young professionals to, as we say, own it. Hashtag own it. We want you to own your Judaism. And lectures are great. I know myself that if I had put in a full day's work and I'm sitting in a room and it could be a very charismatic person, I would be... So maybe I'm just projecting, but we try almost always to have source materials that, you know, many times I'll say is that don't believe us. You know, look for yourself. You know, look for yourself. You know, challenge us. The whole Jewish learning is based on questions and answers. And it's become a really beautiful weekly thing. People check in.
you know, and it's a really very nice community. So that's been amazing. And Jen, you've been so consistent about that. Okay, so that's the weekly programs. Tell us a little bit about Shabbos in the Hood. The Hood, we like to go as West Rogers Park. But tell us a little about the Shabbos in the Hood.
Yeah, it's just, it's so special. It's hard to really replicate that anywhere except for here. You do the full 25 hours in West Rogers Park.
Now, you do have a hashtag 25-hour club
sweatshirt. I do. I have the sweatshirt. It's very comfy. Highly recommend it. But yeah, basically you're staying in West Rogers Park, and really you're celebrating Shabbos. You're having wonderful meals with wonderful families. You're being able to daven. You're being able to be just really part of the community, and you can just walk down the street and tell someone good Shabbos. And you're like, there's a magic to it, which is really, really beautiful.
I couldn't have said that better myself. Did I write that for you?
No.
I didn't. It was totally unscripted. Yeah. And this is the magic that we want to share. And by the way, it's frightening. It's frightening for young professionals to come and like, Rabbi, you want me to like what? I'm like, yeah, just come spend the night and it'll be great. I haven't done a sleepover since I'm in like six. I'm like, dude, let me just say, whatever fancy condo you have, I have much better accommodations here in West. Which mansion do you want? Which home? Which one do you want? So it's great. So and that's part of your being a leader, which you have, we've heard from being young, is you're going to do the right thing and people follow, which is great. Okay, tell us now a little bit about Shabbos in the City, which started 14 months ago.
Yeah.
Okay, with our launch of our downtown center.
Yeah. A little bit different than Shabbos in the Hood, but usually the Friday night there's a packed house, anywhere between 70 and 100 people, all enjoying a really nice meal together. And then the real fun happens during Shabbos day, Saturday. Basically, you can daven in the morning, and then there's a really nice kiddush, there's a really nice lunch, there's a really nice discussion on, sometimes it's the Parsha, sometimes it's words of wisdom, and then there's usually some guest speakers, often a family or a couple, talking about their experiences, and then you just kind of relax all day. You can
ping pong,
you can chat, you can play games. It's just very really nice and relaxing all the way through Havdalah, and then there's just like a beautiful closure to the whole day. It's really nice.
So let's talk a little bit about travel. I have two more things I read in particular, and then we'll see what else, but I want to talk a little about your travel with Project 613, because we have together stamp some good places in your passport, and then I want to finish with mentorship.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell us about your travels.
Yeah, I was on the Spain Summit in 2023, which was just really, there was something so special about being back in the area that my family had been from. And there was one point where we were doing Havrusa learning in an area that had been a synagogue, and I was just like, oh, we're like, the walls were no longer there. It was basically a park, but there was just something about like taking the area that had been lost to us. And there were a thousand Jewish people in one area doing Havrusa learning, and just it was so special because this was such an important area, and it was important again because what we were doing there.
Amazing. So this Olami Summit, you know, Project 613 is an integral part of Olami, certainly here in Chicago, and we feel blessed to be part of the network, put on these absolutely incredible summits. The last one internationally was in 2023. And in Spain, it was just unbelievable. And they said, and it's true, that it's the largest gathering of Jews learning Torah since we left. And by the way, I was even thinking about it. 500 years ago, I don't know if there was a time when there were 1,000 Jews learning Torah together, even in the Golden Age. I don't know. But either way, it was a sense of triumph, of coming back. Like many places, they tried to wipe us out. We won.
We're back. Triumphantly, with the same tool that got us through 500 years of exile, which was the Torah. So that was a very special trip. We had a ton of fun also.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, people from all around the world. Not much sleep in that trip. Okay, that was great. And then take us, and then about 6 months later.
I was fortunate enough to go to Panama with the Olami Sold group. It was a women's only trip, and it was just... It was so special. Before going on the trip, I had no idea there was such a vibrant Jewish community in Panama. And we were eating kosher food for an entire week. Every meal was at a different amazing restaurant. But also just being able to, again, learn, being able to connect to our Judaism, being able to see like the beautiful synagogues they have there. It was just... It was a once-in-a-lifetime trip, and I am so fortunate to have been able to go on it.
Amazing. Tell us a little bit about Sold itself, the program.
Yeah, so it's very similar to the mentorship program in that it's women that they can be all over, I believe, the world. Mm-hmm. They're matched up with a Sold coach, and then they do learning together. And I know they have kind of like a webinar every mm-hmm. Sunday. And it's just, it's a great program, and they also do wonderful trips. So definitely,
amazing,
yeah.
Wonderful. Okay, let's pivot to mentorship, which I know has meant a lot to you. Mm-hmm. Tell us about mentorship in general, and then specifically your connection. I know you have a very special connection with mm-hmm. Dina Zimmerman. Yeah. So general and then specific.
Yeah, so mentorship, essentially, everyone is connected to their mentor, and then together you go through the source material that has been put together by Olami, and it's just really understanding all these elements of life, being Jewish, and learning of all these wonderful things from Jewish scholars, from the Torah, and just really, like, all this great information that you can then discuss with your mentor, and you can... have this really great back and forth to understand where he or she has been, where you are, and just really being part of that great Jewish journey.
Beautiful. Now tell us about you and Dina.
Oh, so I have been so fortunate to be with Dina. She is such a caring and loving person, and I feel like I'm part of her family. When I'm in West Rogers Park, I'm fortunate to be able to stay with her during Shabbos. Her family is amazing. One of the first times I was there, her daughter was like, "Oh, so we're gonna adopt you now, right? You're gonna be one of the sisters." Like, not quite, but they're just so loving. They're so caring, and it's just really beautiful to have just another really close relationship. We can talk about anything. We've talked about our lives. We've talked about our hopes, our dreams, our goals, and it's such a wonderful resource to have that person in your life.
Wow. Well, you know, she kind of likes you too.
Yeah.
And we were talking before the interview that she would love to be here, but she couldn't. She's in Florida.
Yeah.
But we're a little sneaky. And this is your life. I know. I'm not giving you an iPhone. But I am going to show you a message that, again, Rabbi Marcus will broadcast. But this is a message for Dina, from Dina, congratulating you on being Mensch of the Month.
Mazel Tov, Jen, for being Mensch of the Month. I'm so proud of you. It's been so nice to get to know you. Past couple years, such great conversations we've had and we continue to have, and I'm so, so proud that all the time I'm always asking you, like, what's going on, where are you going? You always have a list of places, the activities you're doing, Project 613, and you're very involved, and you are definitely the Mensch of the Month, and it's so, so great to be learning with you. Congratulations.
There you go. Okay, so it's very mutual. I'm so glad that you and Dina were able to connect. And I think it's the best of what it means to be Jewish. We're all about family. We're all mm-hmm. about connecting. And when we talk about the Masorah, the chain of tradition, it's not only rabbi, it's family, it's mentors, it's everything. So beautiful. Okay, Jen, any other words? Give us any young professionals who are out in Chicagoland, why should they get... why should they be part of Project 613?
It's just a really wonderful it's a family. It feels like if you have any questions, if you're trying to figure out, okay, where you are on your Jewish journey, it's going to help build your arsenal of understanding, and you can ease into it, start coming for the food, and then stay for the Torah learning, and then it's a really great experience. Highly recommend.
Great. Thank you, Jen. And last thing, single, dating?
I'm taken.
I'm taken? Okay.
By a mensch.
Okay, by a mensch. And, yes. And we love your mensch. Okay. Yeah. All right. God willing, we'll have happy times to share together for many, many years. Jen, on behalf of my wife, Suri, Rabbi Marcus, Rabbitson Marcus, and our robust live studio audience, we want to wish you Mazel Tov on being Mensch of the Month, and we look forward to many wonderful things together in the future.
Thank you, Rabbi.
So Mazel Tov. Thanks.